You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how are you this week?
I'm doing all right there, Chris. Just a pretty good week, although I did have a fantastic surprise waiting for me today. I had the brand new Diamond Select Enterprise E waiting on my doorstep, so I pulled that out, was playing with it, you know, flying it around the house. Then my roommate came home and I had to stop because I looked really silly.
I'm waiting for the Diamond Select Yangtze Qiang because everyone knows that that is the best runabout that Starfleet ever built, and I don't know when they're going to make it, but I'm waiting.
I'm with you. That's a great runabout. It's definitely my favorite as well. And the thought of, you know, just be able to kind of fly that around and hopefully, you know, it's the right size with all the other ships and, you know, maybe you could get a Deep Space Nine so you could dock it and everything. Oh, hours of fun right there.
That would be something to have a Deep Space Nine at which you can dock your Diamond Select Yangtze Qiang because they'd have to be at the proper scale for docking procedures.
Yeah.
So that DS9 is going to be really huge.
I'm thinking it's probably going to end up being the size of my living room. But hey, I've got the space and I'm single. So what are you going to do?
All right. Now, soon on the show, we're going to get into various topics about the series. But before that, we do want to continue to run through an exploration of the main characters of the show. And one person who we haven't covered in a dedicated episode yet, is Kira. Now, I was thinking about Kira, and I was thinking that we could probably talk about her for about 5 hours, because she is one of the most complex characters in all of Star Trek. Now, we don't have 5 hours here, so we're just going to touch on some of the key points about Kira today. And Matthew, why don't we start out with her early life?
You know, the more I was thinking about Kira today and just kind of her early life, you know, we had the great Voyager episode, Year of Hell, but all I could think of that Kira has years of hell. I mean, her parents and her, they live in this, you know, kind of horrible situation in these camps. Her mother gets taken away from her very early. You know, as far as she knows, for the longest time, her mother died. And, you know, then of course her father dies and she joins a resistance cell, ends up spending her youth killing Cardassians in the worst situations possible. I just can't imagine having this as a childhood. And then I remember that, you know, there are children all over the world who end up having this kind of childhood. And it puts me very firmly in the real world when I hear and I watch through some of the different episodes they did on Kira's story. It's a violent reminder of even some of our past, just the way people think, persecuted, occupations, all of these kind of things. It brings up a lot of different issues all within just talking about Kira's past.
It does. It allows Star Trek to talk about those issues, which are very real to us, and to do it in a way where they can dig into the issue, because on other series like The Next Generation, we've seen some worlds with maybe similar problems, but we only get to visit them for one episode. And really, our main characters are not in the middle. They're not impacted directly by what's going on there beyond maybe you have a case like Beverly being kidnapped in the high ground, right? So this is a case where Deep Space Nine did set up a story that allowed us to explore an issue like this, and it really affected who our character became by the time that we met them in the first episode of this series. So, you know, all of this affected Kira, led up to the angry woman who we see arguing with the minister as Sisko enters what would become his office, you know, for the first time. It's such a rich background. You know, I was just saying she's one of the most complex characters in Star Trek. And they set her up with such a background, such a history from the very beginning that it made you want to know, why is this woman so angry? And then luckily the detail was there that they could go back in episode after episode after episode and explain and dig deeply into that history.
Well, and you know, when you think that her very first mission happens when she's 12 with the Shakar resistance cell, and the metal that composes her earring that she wears for the rest of her life comes from the skimmer that they destroyed. The implications of that, you know, her religious symbol that she wears is in herself are basically forged in blood. You know, you could talk for at least an hour and a half just on what that means as a, you know, for a character to have that kind of symbolism around them all the time. You know, this is a character that I think has such a sense of realism to it from the moment you meet her. And, you know, we know people like this that are, you know, they've had so much go wrong in their life, or they've had such a hard time that they are this kind of angry, bitter person, at least in the beginning. And that's who Kira at least starts out to be. And of course,
that's who she starts out to be.
Exactly.
Right. One thing that strikes me every time I watch Emissary is how Kira seems so real from the very moment that you meet her. You don't really feel like, okay, here's this actress playing this character. You know, someone has told her, here are your lines. Here's a little bit of background about your character. Let's go shoot the pilot episode. You don't feel like that. It's an amazing performance by Nana Visitor. And I also think that they gave her enough background to who this character is that she was able to just capture that childhood of Kira from the start. And she seems so real. But it is, like you said, a very tragic childhood. Now, one question that this does bring up that I think we just should address, I don't want to get into a big discussion about this topic on this particular show, but, you know, a lot of people see Kira as a terrorist. And I think the word terrorist is a strong word. It's also, you know, it's something that someone is either a terrorist or a freedom fighter, depending on the perspective of the person who's making the statement about the other person. And I don't know. I mean, what I did find interesting, though, because I don't know, I don't really see Kira as a terrorist, although I can completely see why other fans view her that way. What I find interesting is that in the DS9 Writer's Bible, they actually do use the term terrorist in reference to the Bajoran Underground. But what's your view on this kind of controversial topic about Kira?
You know, I guess it comes down to, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And really, it's about perspective. You know, the Cardassians obviously view them as terrorists. But the issue is the Cardassians have taken over this planet that which is not theirs. And therefore, fighting for their freedom, the Bajorans have had to do things and use tactics that we might consider unsavory. And yet they don't have a lot of options left, especially with the amount of force that the Cardassians have against them. So guerrilla tactics, you know, I think of the idea of the Vietnamese and the Vietnam War, those kind of tactics. This is what we see play out in the Bajoran occupation with the Bajoran resistance. Do I think they're terrorists? No. And the reason I say that is because it's their planet. This is their home.
Right.
And they are defending their right to freedom in the same way that we would if somebody came marching onto our shores and said, hey, this is our country. And we'd be like, no, it's not. And, you know, if we had to resort to these kind of tactics, would you call us terrorists? No.
I think that's the thing. As an outsider view, you look at a situation like that, and you think that the simple act of attacking makes you a terrorist. But I do think, you know, in the case of the United States, if a foreign force came and occupied the United States, people would fight back. And in that case, they certainly wouldn't see themselves as terrorists, right? They would see themselves as trying to liberate their country. So anyway, this is actually a topic for an entire show. I did want to address it while we're talking about Kira, simply because it is a controversial point about her and the actions of the Bajoran militia. So we'll come back to that on some other show.
One of the things that we do see with Kira, you know, she has this terrible upbringing with working with the Shikar resistance cell. They finally do, after 50 years of occupation, get rid of the Cardassians. The provisional government obviously turns around and asks the Federation to come in and help them. Kira is not obviously a big fan of this, and so she ends up, though, being chosen by that. She ends up being chosen by that provisional government as the liaison officer for the new Deep Space Nine station. A very big turn of events for her, and not a posting that she wants. I think it's very interesting that both her and Sisko start off this show being in a place that they couldn't want to be further from. And
exactly,
she really ends up having a very tough time, honestly, transitioning from Bajoran underground to liaison officer to the Federation. What did you think about that transition, Chris?
Well, it's a really good point that, of course, she doesn't want to be there. I think she kind of almost sees it as a punishment in a way that she's been sent there. And Sisko doesn't want to be there either, largely in Sisko's case because of Jake. You know, he's trying to recover from the loss of Jennifer, and he needs to raise his son, and suddenly here he is in this very dangerous place out in the middle of nowhere, from his perspective. Having the two of them in that situation, having to work together, of course it creates a great conflict, and, you know, that's something that was kind of new between our main characters on this show. They kind of have to help each other along, I think. Sisko walks in thinking that, oh, I don't want to be here, but we're the Federation. I asked for a Bajoran liaison officer. She's going to help me along because, you know, we're here to do good for the Bajorans. We're going to help them recover from this occupation. Everything's going to be great. And then he finds out that, no, I've got this really angry woman who doesn't want me here. The interesting twist to it, though, is that Kira's faith and her belief in the Bajoran religion is so strong. And when she comes to accept the fact that Sisko is a religious icon within her own faith, that puts her in a very unique situation of having to work with him. And how does that affect her view of the Federation's presence? Because it's no longer just the Federation with whom she's working here, but she's actually working with emissary to the prophets. And certainly, whether or not she believes that the Federation should be there and that they can help Bajor, she personally believes that the prophets will help Bajor. And maybe they have sent the Federation and Sisko there. That is a twist put on this whole transition that she goes through.
Well, and I think that really speaks to the idea of Kira as a woman of faith. This is a woman whose real driving force is not just her planet. It's not just her people. It's not getting rid of the Cardassians. It's not becoming a sovereign planet again. It is her belief in the prophets. She is a woman of deep faith, and this faith gives her this kind of quiet confidence, this assurance, this unshakable strength. And so I do think that the moment that she sees Sisko as the emissary, she automatically accepts that the Federation is here for a reason. And I think something we were talking about right before the show started was when Kaiopaka dies and then comes back to life on the planet in the Gabbro Quadrant. And she decides to stay there, one, because she can't leave, but two, because she feels like she's called by the prophets to stay there. And that has a deep emotional impact on Kira, seeing that she's been put in the place that she is for a reason as well. And it's her calling from the prophets to do what they've given her to do to the best of her ability. And I love the depth and the beauty of the way that faith is portrayed through Kira and what it does for her character. Because really, too, I think her faith, more than anything else, gives her the ability to be on the road to healing as a character as well. You know, I think without it, she would have kind of ended up like Ensign Ro, who just is always somebody who's angry. Kira's deep abiding faith, I think, really enables her to get on a road to forgiveness.
Right. Yeah. The Kaiopaka thing is, it's a really good turning point very early at the very beginning of the series for Kira in her thought process. And it's one of those episodes that I think it's easy for you to forget about because, you know, Kaiopaka was only there for a few episodes and then she was gone. And then we get into the whole issue of who's going to be the Kai, and then we get Vedic Wynn, and then we know everything that happens after that. And for most of the series, you think of the Kai as being Wynn. But yeah, that story with Opaka is very important to her. And the point you make about faith that I think is also important here is that the turmoil, going back to Kira's early life, the turmoil that she went through, the fact that she had to take action is very important because I think the strength that you can get from faith, as you say, is very important. And perhaps Ro's lack of faith is the reason why she's the type of character that we see on The Next Generation. But at the same time, I mean, faith can be dangerous too, because if you put too much trust in faith and you believe that, in the case here, that the prophets are going to take care of you, and you just kind of sit back like, okay, well, everything's going to be fine because the prophets are going to take care of me. That's on the flip side, I think, just as dangerous as not having faith. Kira's background of having to jump into action during the occupation gave her the ability to balance her faith and her trust in the prophets with the attitude that she's going to take care of herself. She's going to take action when it's necessary. So she got like both sides of the coin there, and she's able to bring them together to make a much stronger character than she would have been if she were just completely devoted to the faith or completely opposed to the faith, as we see with Ro.
Well, and two things I think are really interesting is I believe that her faith, it gives her a freedom to act, not a freedom to sit back and do nothing. I think her faith gives her freedom of action, that she does need to do something, that, you know, the prophets aren't going to just solve everything with a magic wand. And she knows this. And then, you know, this parallels very nicely with just a lot of the different, at least for me, for my faith as well. And I can't just sit back and wait for something to happen, you know, just sit in this chair for the rest of my life and wait for, you know, something from God to happen. It just doesn't work like that.
And yeah.
The other thing I think is really interesting here.
But I think a lot of people do that.
Exactly. And no, I think that's a message here. Yes.
I think that's a message here of what we see with Kira, that, you know, that's not enough.
Well, and the next thing that I thought was really interesting too is that Kira never questions the prophets as to why did you do this to us, which I don't know how this is never a question for her, because even for me, the question becomes, why is this happening? You know, and even if one is not a believer in anything, that question still comes up in your mind as what is going on? You know, you just kind of shake your hands in the air and at the sky, and as if, you know, there's somebody there. And I think this is a huge thing because to me, it shows what true faith really does for somebody. It gives somebody peace outside of circumstance. And I think this is probably the hardest thing to learn for anyone, and especially a people of faith, because circumstances, a lot of times for all of us humans, they give us what we think, what we feel, and we live off a circumstance. When you have faith, and it's genuine and it's real, and you feel like you have a reason to have it in something, it gives you a peace that passes all understanding. And I think this is a beautiful picture, and I really appreciate that Deep Space Nine does this with Kira, because this isn't something that Star Trek has ever done before, and really legitimizes, I think, people of faith. And I'm really thankful for Kira for that reason.
Well, let's move on to Kira's attitude towards Cardassians and how she goes from, in her early life, being someone who just sees Cardassians as this faceless enemy, this occupation force that must be destroyed for the freedom of her own people, to, during her time on the station, she gradually comes to see the individuals. I think this is something that we all face at some point in our lives, where, of course, we're influenced by our parents as we grow up. And depending on where you grow up in the world, you may be raised, perhaps unintentionally, to hate certain other people, you know, certain groups of people, certain races, certain nationalities. And you don't think about them as people, you know, you just see them as, oh, well, these are the Chinese, you know, for example, or, you know, these are the Jews, which you mentioned earlier, because, you know, the whole occupation of Bajor does have a lot of parallels to things that have happened, persecution of groups in the past. But as you go through life and you learn more and more and you meet more and more people, you come to see that there's a distinction between the whole and the individual. And so even if you were raised with a negative image of a group, as you meet people from that group, you learn, you know, we're all just people. We're all individuals, and we can learn something from one another regardless of our background. And we see that with Kira in a number of stories where she has encounters with Cardassians that start to help her to separate this view of faceless Cardassia and the people who are actually impacted by the actions of the occupation on both sides, not just on the Bajoran side, but also how it impacted Cardassians on a personal level.
This is something that was really interesting to me when I was just kind of looking back over Kira's life, and I was thinking about the different things that have helped her kind of grow. And I came across, that when they have the Cardassian show up who says he's Darheel, one of the worst war criminals that the Cardassians had against the Bajorans. And then, of course, it turns out that this person was nothing but a file clerk. And yet he feels so guilty for what his people have done to the Bajorans that he's willing to pretend, you know, he's changed his face. He's made himself look like Darheel. And yet, no, he's Maritza. He's a file clerk. And this whole episode really does a wonder, I think, with kind of opening Kira's eyes to the reality of what it was like to be a Cardassian on the other side and not necessarily believe in anything that your people are doing and feel helpless to stop it. Now, does that necessarily make everything he did right? No. But it does, I think, open up her heart to the idea of forgiveness of Cardassians as a whole, realizing I can't hate them all. They're not all responsible for this. And it's a fantastic episode, and this happens a few times over the series as Kira gets to know Cardassians on a personal level, you know, to the point where she reaches to getting to know Damar firsthand, somebody she couldn't stand before because of his actions in the past. And yet, as she sees the kind of man that he is, I think she actually really respects him. It's difficult for her to respect him.
They have a lot of similarities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it makes for fascinating character growth.
Yeah. This episode with Maritz, which is Duet, I think it's an early turning point for Kira in learning to separate the individual from the whole. And there's that other Bajoran who's there in the cell, as well, Kanan, which is kind of a crazy Bajoran, I would say, and I don't particularly like the performance of the actor. It was, you know, not great. But the presence of Kanan, I think, was important because he and Kira are on the same side at the beginning of the episode. You know, here it is. This guy's a Cardassian. We're pretty sure he's this war criminal. We should just kill him now. You know, just get it over with. But by the end, yeah, Kira has a change of heart. And Kira realizes that this is someone from the other side who feels terrible about what happened and wants to make a difference and is willing to sacrifice his own sanity and his own life to try to influence his people to accept responsibility for what happened. And then when they release him from the cell and they're going to take him and let him go on his way, and then Kanan stabs him in the back. And I thought the use of this character, though he only appears a couple of points in the episode, is important because it does represent the two sides of Kira here. You have Kira herself, who has had a change of heart, whereas Kanan representing Kira's position at the beginning of the episode that hasn't changed. And, you know, she asks Kanan, why did you do that? And he says, well, he's a Cardassian. That's reason enough. And she says, no, it's not. Not anymore. It's a very powerful episode that helped her along the way. Now, another turning point for her, I think, and we're going to skip over a lot of details just because we only have an hour here, is Zial. When Zial comes into Kira's life, because here you have the daughter of Gul Dukat, the daughter of the man who oversaw the occupation, who is the personification of evil in the eyes of Kira, I think. And Zial is also half Bajoran as well. So she represents that forced mixing of Cardassian and Bajoran that Kira resents so much. But yet she comes to see Zial as part of her family.
I really liked the character of Zial. I liked all the different actors that played her. I thought that it was a really good part. And like you said, I think that this was a character that really helps Kira be able to grow and to move forward. It also gives her an ability for a little while, at least, to see just a smaller, different side of Dukat. I think it's a very small side. I honestly think Dukat's just a megalomaniac in the end, and therefore there isn't a lot to like about him in general, but there is something in him that does love his daughter. It might be small, but it's there. And the relationship that he has with her, he does really care for her. And I think that this does, in a lot of ways, another great service to the character of Kira, of giving her the opportunity to see that even somebody as insane as Dukat, there's something inside of him that there's some goodness. And it comes out in the ways that he interacts with his daughter, the way that he dotes on her, the way he really does care for her. Even though in the end, it's still always, I think, driven in some ways by some underlying motive to kind of prove himself to Kira, and that's a whole nother episode. But
yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't necessarily feel that way about Dukat. I think there is that angle to it, yes. But I do think that Dukat sincerely loves Zial. But we'll talk about that on our Dukat episode when we get to that.
Well, and that's one of the things, I mean, just real quick, that makes this show so great is that the characters are so intertwined. So when you talk about one, you end up talking about all of them, actually.
Exactly.
And it just makes for such a very rich experience. But, I, you know, what did you think about the character of Zial, Chris? And just, one, just her portrayal, and then two, the way that she interacted with Kira and helped her grow.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to go too deeply into Zial herself, but in terms of interaction with Kira, she was especially important, I think, for what we're talking about here of Kira learning to separate the individual from the whole. It would be really easy for someone like Kira to completely reject a person like Zial because being half Bajoran and half Cardassian, I mean, you can't get any stronger embodiment of the occupation than that. And the Kira who fought against the Cardassians, the Kira who we see in Emissary, I think would immediately dismiss someone like Zial. The mere thought of someone who's born of these two worlds would just be too much for Kira at that point. But she gets to interact with Zial firsthand, and she comes to see that, you know, Zial is just this other person. And like you said, I do think too that it gives her a new perspective on Dukat a little bit. You know, Dukat and Kira's relationship is so complex, and that gives her a new perspective. And of course, Zial had a great impact on other characters on the show as well, Garrick in particular. The introduction of Zial, it's really important for the story. It's sometimes, you know, they introduce these characters who are children of the other characters on a show, and you're kind of like, why did you do that? You know, we don't need to have, everyone on the show doesn't need to have a child. But in the case of Deep Space Nine, it was such, bringing Zial onto the station was such a catalyst of change for so many of the characters, including Kira, that we'll definitely do a Zial show, dedicated yes. Zial show down the road.
One of the things...
Because she was so important.
One of the things that I noticed, too, is that it gives Kira the ability to, I think, recognize innocence, you know, who is innocent in this position. You know, Zial she's not responsible for what happened. You know, she's not responsible for being born. She's just there.
Right.
And therefore, yeah. I think Kira sees this little girl and she sees herself in some ways. Somebody who's scared, somebody who has almost no one, and really is not responsible for being in the situation that she's in, but she needs somebody to take care of her. And I think that really brings out in Kira a kind of a cathartic way of kind of working through some of the things that happened to her as a child, and then being part of the occupation and the resistance cell. And this gives her a way, I think, to make sure that this child doesn't have this kind of upbringing. And I think that's why she really takes Zial under her wing. And it really does a number, I think, on changing Kira's just demeanor and attitude in a lot of different ways that kind of get played out then over the series. And I think, you know, go into her then becoming pregnant with the O'Briens and how that changes her. And all of these things kind of link together to bring out a kind of a softer Kira who has found a way to make peace with who she used to be and be comfortable with who she is now.
Right. And in turn, what that also gives her is that she can see that as terrible as the occupation was, some good things came from that as well. I mean, Zial was born. Zial had a positive influence on her. Like you said, a cathartic influence on her. She can see how Zial helps people like Garrick, as I mentioned before. And I mean, it doesn't make up for all the terrible things that happened. But what it does allow her to see is something that we all need to see in life, is that you have to move on. You know, bad things happen, but life goes on, and you have to learn to leave things in the past and move forward. And Zial is that idea incarnate for Kira. While we're talking about relationships, we talked about her relationship with Sisko a bit already at the beginning. You mentioned the O'Briens just a moment ago, and the kind of unusual, yet at the same time creative storyline of her becoming the surrogate mother for the O'Briens' baby. She did carry Kirayoshi to term, and she actually moved in with the O'Briens. She became Aunt Kira to Molly. Tell me a little bit more about how that impacted the growth of Kira.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about was just the way that Kira gets to experience this family life that she's never had. And the O'Briens are a very normal family. They're probably one of the most normal families we ever see in Star Trek. You know, Keiko and Miles, very kind of average married couple. They have their fights, they have their bickers and their quarrels, but they obviously love each other very much. You know, they have a wonderful daughter in Molly, and then they're going to have a new baby that's always exciting, and then get thrown into the mix. Kira is going to be carrying their child, and so this kind of creates this closeness that Kira has with this family and getting to see what it's like to live a normal life as a family. But it also gives her this ability, I think, to see what it means to be really close with somebody in that kind of marriage relationship. And her and Miles begin to get very close. And it's humorous, but you can tell, I think, in Kira, there's a pain there when she knows that she's gotten so close to Miles and this could be something, but then it can't. And neither of them will let themselves go there. But there's a pain in her, I think, when that happens, that, you know, she's gotten to kind of play this role, but that's not where she is. But I think that's where she'd like to be. And in much the same way, I think that I think Picard wants to be a family man. And that's why in Generations you see his Nexus dream, the first place he is at a family Christmas. And that's what his dream is to have. And yet he does not have any idea how to have that. I think Kira is very much the same. And I think this is another way of the writers kind of cathartically changing Kira and giving her a softness to her without kind of beating you over the head with it. And then for me, it is just a perfect storyline, perfect writing. And obviously Nana Visitor was pregnant. They needed to do something.
And that's why I said it was a creative exactly. solution as well.
But it works very well. And so what did you think about that relationship? I think especially that relationship that she kind of cultivates with Miles.
And while this kind of softens her up and lets her experience what it's like to have a family, it also sets up, I think, a later relationship, which is the romantic relationship she has with Odo, because, you know, we learn early on that Odo has feelings for Kira. We don't really know that Kira has feelings for Odo, but as you and I have talked about, there are those latent feelings that you can pick up on here and there. But it takes a long time, I think, before Kira is ready to go there with Odo and actually acknowledge the feelings and start to build a relationship. This whole episode here with the O'Briens and carrying their child, Kiryoshi, to term, and that process of her seeing what it's like to be close to another person, like you said, with Miles, I think helps set up what is to come with Odo.
I think it also just kind of opens up Kira in a way that she begins to think of things that she might not have thought of before about herself. And it gives her that ability to maybe realize that she has had feelings for Odo in a way that she has never thought of before. And so that when she gets told by the Odo and Children of Time that I've loved you forever, something clicks in her that makes sense in a way that it wouldn't have beforehand, because she's been through these experiences. And I think especially with Odo, it took a lot for Kira to get to that point, I think, just to be able to really trust somebody, because she hasn't had the best track record with relationships. I mean, Beryl, you know, he dies. Thomas Riker is a cad. Get Shakar, where they kind of have this, it's an okay relationship. It goes on for a while, but they spend a lot of time apart, and it doesn't necessarily seem to be that intimate or deep, really. And so, in fact, she seems to have a much deeper relationship with Miles than she does with Shakar. And so once you finally get to Odo, I think they've come to this place where they're both ready for it. They're both worked through enough of their issues to be able to kind of have the depth that they're going to want in a relationship.
Right. And as she gets closer to Odo, a lot of things happen here towards the end of the series, and she's getting closer to Odo. And then we have the Dominion occupation of DS9, where they've driven the Federation out, and Kira's left behind on the station. And at first, she's cooperating with the Cardassians. She's cooperating with the Dominion. That goes on for a while. And Odo, at the same time, has this, you know, he stays holed up with the female changeling for a long time. They kind of both need to be snapped out of things at some point. A couple of questions here. Okay, first question, why do you think Kira is going along with the Cardassians and the Dominion at this point? This is before she organizes a resistance, right? She's kind of just going through her daily life. You know, the alarm goes off every morning. She wakes up. She's kind of like, why am I here? But she's going along with it.
You know, I think she just kind of gets lulled into it. In the way that if you tell yourself a lie long enough, you'll begin to believe that it's the truth. I think that Kira's in this situation long enough that she just begins to believe it's not that bad. She begins to forget that they're being occupied again, that it's against their will. And yes, this is a billion times better than the occupation that they had on Bajor with the Cardassians. And yet it's still oppression. And what wakes her up is realizing and I think seeing herself in the mirror of who she's become. And as we were talking about before the show, it's the death of her friend committing suicide on the promenade in demonstration against the Cardassians and their rule. And honestly, I think she does it because she wants to wake Kira up. She wants to snap her out of her malaise. And I think that's really the best word I could think of to what's happened to Kira. She's just kind of in a malaise. She's not surrounded by anyone else who's necessarily really strong. Odo's flaked out on her by this point, really, and she's gotten used to this being around. And I think of that just in a personal sense. Just how, is there something in my life that I'm allowing to have this happen to me? That I'm not being challenged enough to move forward, and I'm just kind of stuck in a rut? You know, I think we've all been in those positions.
Well, yeah, we all get caught up in a routine. And you sit back and you think sometimes, like, I really don't like how things are going. But, you know, like, I need to change this, but I can't. I'm just kind of caught into it. And then something has to happen. And there is that moment when you're like, okay, that's the breaking point. Now I have to make a change. And that's what happened when Vedic Yassim commits suicide. And then Kira snaps out of it. She starts to organize a resistance on the station against the Dominion. And now, how is this different? All the things that she's learned, you know, I mean, we've talked about all her interactions since the time she became the liaison officer to DS9, how she's learned to separate the individual from the whole, how she's learned what it means to have closer relationships with individuals. How does she approach this resistance differently than maybe she did when she was part of the Bajoran Underground? Did you see any difference, or did her previous resistance training just kick in all over again?
No, I think that there's a huge difference in the way that Kira approaches this resistance. And I think the main fact is that she is not willing to just have, you know, kind of mass casualties as a way to make her point, because she knows that's not what's going to work here anyway. There are going to be targeted attacks that are going to lead to the Federation and its allies' victory. And what is that? That's keeping the minefield up. Undermining the enemy in a way that they can't be detected that it's happening. And that's very different, I think, than the resistance that she fought before, which is much more that kind of guerrilla warfare, kind of going all out, not worrying about who's dying in the attacks, and, you know, being on the confined station of Deep Space Nine, she really changes the way she does things.
Does it represent a growth in her ability to trust others? You know, I think what we see in early Kira is that she believes in herself, she believes in her faith, she's going to take care of herself. She doesn't believe in the provisional government's ability to make decisions for the planet. She doesn't believe in the Federation's ability to help them. But at this point, like you said, you talk about things like, let's just keep the mind filled up. Let's just hold them off for a while. At this point, I think she has faith in Sisko, and she has trust in Sisko and the Federation that if she can hold them off long enough, Sisko's going to come back. The Federation is going to make a difference.
Well, and she trusts implicitly the people around her on the station, you know, Quark mm-hmm. and Jake and Odo, and she trusts them to carry out their assignments, which, you know, obviously comes back to bite her in the backside when Odo isn't there for her.
Well, let's talk about Odo just a little bit more since we're on that point here. As we wind down towards the end of the Dominion War and the end of Deep Space Nine's storyline on television, she does get Odo back. And from that point forward, it's sort of they're on a heartbreaking path. You know, they come back together, they get closer, their love grows, and then it's all ripped away at the end. What impact does that growth with Odo from that point on to the end of the story? And of course, it's in the middle of this terrible conflict. How does that change her kind of in the final stages of her growth that we see?
I think one of the things that Kira and Odo's relationship does for Kira is give her this sense of calm. And it gives her a sense of kind of peace that she hasn't had before. You know, there's plenty of times where they're talking in her quarters and, you know, she just kind of lays back on him and he, you know, just strokes her arm and kind of holds her. And I think she feels this security that she's never felt before. And that no matter what happens, I think she feels that everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, you kind of sense that in the final season. There's something about Kira's, the way she projects herself that feels very different from the Kira of the past.
And I don't think it's in a way that she's lost any of herself. I think she has just become more comfortable. And really, honestly, for a lack of a better term, she's become more at peace with where she is and who she is and who she's with. And Odo and her have been on very similar paths in a lot of ways and just kind of from different perspectives. Even what we were talking about with the resistance and where they were, you know, both Odo and Kira get kind of caught in a situation where they can't believe they were there after they were there. You know, Odo with his being caught with a female changeling and getting caught up in that and then can't believe that that's what he did. You know, Kira can't believe that she's kind of become the collaborator that she's always hated. So they have a lot in common and they avoid each other for a while, but it just turns out that you can't fight love.
But in the end, she is willing to let him go because she ultimately wants what's best for him. And that in itself, I think, is a change in Kira that she's learned through all this process to see the other person in a way that she really couldn't, I think, when we saw her slam her fist on the screen in Emissary.
Yeah, I think that in the end, too, Kira's a really unselfish character, and that comes across with allowing Odo to leave. It will break her heart that they will be apart. She knows that it is what's best for Odo and his people, but she also knows that it is also what is best for her, because how could she keep him away from his people? And, you know, Kira is, I think, one of the most unselfish characters that we see in Star Trek, because all of her life has been about giving to her people. It's been giving to her work. It's been giving to others. And she's constantly striving to do these things to the best of her ability for other people. And that's, again, I think, a part of her faith. She's secure in that I'm not here in this universe just to get for myself. I'm here to make a difference.
So we're coming to the end of the war here. And one other thing that I wanted to ask you your thoughts on is the way that she becomes a Starfleet commander, first of all. And that's because they believe it will be easier for people like Damar to accept her if she's Starfleet and not Bajoran. And she goes to Cardassia and she actually teaches Damar, who interestingly is, I would say reluctantly, but he is accepting of her guidance because he understands that they have to drive the Dominion out. She ends up fighting on the side of the Cardassians to liberate Cardassia from an occupation, which is amazing. I mean, she fought as a youth to liberate Bajor from Cardassian occupation. She grew up hating Cardassians blindly. Now she's learned over the processes we've talked about to have a deeper understanding of the intricacies of events in life. And she can now see the importance of making sure that Cardassia isn't lost to the Dominion. She can see how helping them is for the greater good. What did it say to you to see her on Cardassia fighting alongside Damar to liberate Cardassia?
I think this is one of the most amazing things to happen in Deep Space Nine. To watch Damar, who killed Zial, become a hero, even in Kira's eyes.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, he killed Zial, and yet here Kira is now helping him.
And, you know, there is that underlying tension for a while between them. And yet, it seems to me that in the end, she forgives him. This is, I'm not really even sure how to describe what happens here, because it's so unhuman. I mean, I don't think that, again, I don't think that Kira as a person, if she did not believe what she believed and had the faith that she had, would be able to move past something like this. And yet Kira is able to put that aside, be able to forgive somebody like Damar. And I think it's because of her experience with Teneni Gamor, who she's also able to forgive for the massacre that he was involved in the occupation. She's able to let that go because she realizes it's in the past. He regrets it, obviously, immensely. I think Damar, more than anyone, regrets his killing of Zial. And it stays with him. And I think, honestly, that pain kind of drives him to become the man that he becomes. And I think that's something that Kira can see. And I think she's astute enough and she's willing enough to kind of see that in Damar and allow that to become something that goes under the bridge. I think this is a huge character-defining moment for Kira. And I think of them in that scene where they're in the basement and it's her and it's Garak and Damar and how they're just laughing and they're, you know, it's not funny, but they've become this kind of odd family. And yeah, she has, I think, a really, not begrudging respect, but she has a deep respect for these two men by the end. And this is, I think, one of the things where we were talking about when we talked about Sisko. This is where we really struggle with, okay, who has the better character arc? Because honestly, this is just an incredible arc to come to this point, especially from the woman, you know, at the beginning of the first episode shouting, "There's your wormhole!" You know?
a line that I quote often for some reason. But yeah, you're right. Kira had one of the most amazing arcs in all of Star Trek, one of the most complex characters from the very beginning, and then was developed so much over the course of the series. It's wonderful and amazing to see where she ended up. Are there any final thoughts that you have on Kira before we wrap up?
You know, Chris, I think, I think that I'd put this somewhere when I was writing out my notes today. I think Kira is the very best Star Trek female character that has ever been written.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, easy to agree with.
And I think that, though, because the depth of this character is amazing. The arc of this character is incredible. But what you get is you never lose the sense that she's a woman. And so she's mm-hmm. a strong, vibrant, passionate, you know, gung-ho woman who is, you know, honestly, in the end, too, very much a hard-ass when she needs to be. And yet she never loses that sense that of who she is as a woman. And I think this is great female writing. This is somebody that I think any female could look up to more than just about any other female in Star Trek. This is a woman that you can look up to.
Right. And she's not the only female character in Star Trek who has played a lead role. I'm sure that some people listening may be saying, what about Janeway? What about Janeway? But I think a big difference with Kira is that Kira is consistent. She changes drastically as a person over the course of the story, but she's always consistent in her convictions. I think she's steadfast in her beliefs. She's consistent. Although she changes, the way that she approaches things changes over the course of the series. It's a very natural flow. You can follow the line of her growth as a person. She doesn't really do things that make you scratch your head, like, why does she do this in this episode? Because that's just not Kira. And then in the next episode, she has a very different reaction. She's just a very, very, everything that you said about her just now is a strong woman, plus the fact that she's very consistent in her convictions. I think all that together, I would agree with you that she's the best female character in Star Trek.
Well, and on the other side too, and I talked about this earlier, I just appreciate what Kira does with her faith and the way that she lives out that faith so honestly and openly. I think that it portrays well what I hope to portray well in my life as a person of faith. And, you know, she's not running around trying to convert people. She's just living it out in front of people in a way that makes it attractive to others. And I think that that's beautiful. And I'm really thankful that the writers of Deep Space Nine allowed a character to have this kind of faith and be somebody that we can look up to and not kind of, you know, just make fun of.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, I'm sure we will come back to Kira many times on the Orb because there is so much to talk about. And we definitely glossed over many, many details of her life, her relationships, and her actions. But until then, Matthew, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Kira. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there, and you can choose to send to a show, choose the Orb, and that will come to both of us. You can also go to trek.fm/forums, where we have new forums in place. There is a dedicated area for the Orb, as well as one for Deep Space Nine, and we'd love to talk to you about Kira and anything about Deep Space Nine there. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and of course on Twitter under username trekfm. Matthew, what if people want to look you up personally?
Yes, Chris, I hope they do. I am on Twitter at MattRushing02. Of course, I'm also all over Trek FM. I do the book reviews and literary treks with you as well, where we talk books and comics. One of the things I did want to mention that we wanted to mention, we wanted to thank a iTunes reviewer who gave us a fantastic review. Really want to thank you for that. It was Fleet Feet 47. We just really appreciate you taking out your time. to give us a review. It does help us to get noticed by iTunes. We have been in the new and noteworthy section recently. We're very proud to be there. We're proud of this show. And we just want to thank you so much for the support that you've given us.
Absolutely. We really appreciate hearing from you, both written reviews and, of course, star reviews are always welcome as well. Help others find the show. And, you know, if you've written a review, if you've given us a rating and we've missed thanking you on the show, we're sorry about that. And we really do appreciate it. It's a little bit difficult to find reviews as they're posted in different countries because of the way iTunes works. So if you are outside of the U.S., please, if you leave us a review, shoot us a note. Let us know that you left a review in your local country store so we can go check that out. But we really do appreciate all the support that we get from you guys.
And Chris, where can we find you around the interwebs?
Oh, that's right. I am living somewhere in that series of tubes known as the interwebs. You can find me on Twitter. My username is CBrianJones. That's Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much anywhere in social media under that same username. And you can find me elsewhere here on the network, of course, with you, Matthew, on Literary Treks. You can also find me each week on The Ready Room with Greg Harbin, where we talk about all the Star Trek series as well as Star Trek news. We do Deep Space Nine on there, but we also do TOS, TNG, Voyager, and Enterprise, and the movies as well. So lots of stuff there for you to listen to. You can find that over at trek.fm/TRR, or look it up in iTunes or in Downcast. There's RSS feed as well, if you are using Android. So lots of ways you can get it, even on Stitcher. So give us a listen there.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.